Good day. My name is Elsa, and I will be your conference operator today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the NBPE Investor Conference Call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. Mr. Peter Vong Lee, you may begin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the NB Private Equity Partners Investor Update Call. This is Peter Vong Lee, and I'm here today with my partners, John Boozer and Paul Daggett. The presentation we'll be referring to today, as well as the shareholder circular, can be found on our website, www.nbprivateequitypartners.com. We have very exciting news to share with you today, both in terms of our 2016 results, as well as our proposal to enfranchise our Class A shares, and we look forward to discussing those with you. So let's turn to the presentation on page two. As you know, the objective of NBPE is to provide investors with the opportunity for both capital appreciation and current income by investing into private equity-backed companies across the capital structure using a best relative value approach. We are proud to say that we have very much accomplished these goals over the years and in 2016 in particular. And we do all this at a lower all-in cost to investors than other listed private equity vehicles. Now, we accomplish all this by using the resources and capabilities of our manager, Neuberger Berman, which manages over $49 billion in private equity. On page three, you can see some of the updated statistics on Neuberger's private equity business, and in the interest of time, I won't go through all of those now, but as you can see, our platform is strong and growing, which results in material opportunities and advantages for NBPE. So now let's look at a snapshot of 2016 on page four of the presentation. During 2016, we had a 14.8% NAV per share total return, which we're very proud of, also a 17% share price total return during the year. In terms of cash flows, very active year, both in terms of realizations as well as new investment activity. We had $331 million of distributions from investments, and made $159.5 million of new investments as well. And importantly, for you as shareholders, and us as shareholders as well, paid $24.4 million in dividends. We have a very strong capital position as of the end of February, $743 million of private equity fair value, very strong adjusted commitment coverage ratio. And in terms of dividends, our dividend yield is 3.9%. On the current share price and 3.2% on NAV, and we continue to have our sterling dividend option and dividend reinvestment plan available to investors. So now I'd like to hand it over to Paul, who will provide you with more details on our results for 2016.
Great. Thank you, Peter. So on page five, there is a detailed NAV update looking at a summary balance sheet as of three different time periods, the end of December 2015, 2016, and the most recent results at the end of February of 2017. A few things that I'd like to point out, and then we'll dig into those in more detail as we look at our results and performance. First of all, you'll see that the private equity investment level did fall during the year and even over the last 2 months from 116% to 97%. I'll talk about the investment pace a little bit later, but the reason for that is very strong liquidity that we've had from the portfolio. In particular, the income portfolio as well as the direct equity portfolio saw a number of exits producing very good results, and that did drive that level down somewhat. Also, the funds continued to wind down, decreasing from $180 million to $148 million of fund exposure. So overall, the exposure did decline a little bit, but that was driven by very good exit events across the portfolio. We have at this point, you'll see $111 million of cash and equivalents available, as well as $150 million available on our credit facility, giving us $261 million of available capital resources at this point in time. Just looking at the very bottom of the page, the NAV per share, Peter described that over the year, NAV per share grew by almost 15% on a total return basis. That was driven by realized and unrealized gains of $85 million over the year, as well as $31 million of yield income and dividends that came from the income portfolio, meaning we saw gains in the private equity portfolio of almost $120 million during the year. So a very good year for the portfolio as a whole. And then just on the first 2 months of the year, so far relatively flat, which actually is pretty typical, given that most of the valuation information has already been incorporated in our year-end results. So if you look back over our prior years, that is typically how the year starts out. So it's difficult to read anything into really the February update numbers. Moving on to page six and looking at our portfolio diversification, we look at it in four different ways. The top two pie charts really show how we've constructed the portfolio from a bottom-up perspective, focused on North America and really on the mid-market in private equity. Those are both areas that we continue to believe are strong areas for investment, and they are how we've really characterized our portfolio over the last several years. The industry exposure is relatively unchanged, very well diversified by industry. Technology came down a little bit. That is mostly because of the Deltek exit, which was a position we had both equity and debt in. That was a very successful exit, but reduced the technology exposure very slightly. And then in terms of vintage year, I think there's a number of interesting points here. First of all, you'll see there is a low exposure to older vintage years. So, for example, 2008 and earlier, 2009, 2010, most of that exposure is the legacy fund portfolio. There's very little direct investment exposure in there. And, in fact, of the exits we had during 2016, five of those were in those 2008 and older investments. So, again, it's good to see that portfolio continue to decline and us refocusing our portfolio on newer investments. And about two-thirds of our portfolio has been invested over the last 3 years. Almost 80% has been invested from 2013 onwards. And again, I see that as a very positive sign in that it shows that we don't have a lot of older investments sitting in the portfolio. Instead, we're able to continue to have a relatively young portfolio with about a 3.2 years holding period on average in our equity investments. So they are there is a diverse set of investments, some of which are in the exit window, some of which are younger. But overall, as you look at our portfolio, you don't see a lot of older vintage year exposure. On slide seven, looking at the investment activity and liquidity, what this shows you is that over the last 2 years and so far in 2017, distributions have outpaced new investments. That's driven by those strong exits that we've seen both in the equity and in the income portfolio. So we had $900 million of distributions since 2014, and we've invested about $700 million over that same time period. Really, the message from 2016 in particular was that we were measured in our pace of investment. We are seeing a lot of investments both on the income side and the equity side. In fact, we're seeing probably stronger deal flow than we've ever seen, but we have been selective, mostly around pricing in both of those areas. I'd say so far in 2017, the pace has been a little bit stronger than we saw in 2016, and we're looking at a significant amount of active investments at the moment. So we do intend and expect to reinvest a lot of that cash that we do have on the balance sheet at the moment. It's not something we're worried about. But as you can see in 2016, we are willing to be patient and wait for the right opportunities. In terms of new investments in 2017, slide eight gives you an idea of what we've done so far. And I'll just very quickly go through each of them. But overall, they are exactly the type of investments that we've told you we focus on, both on the equity side as well as on the income side. The equity investment we did in February of this year, a company called Omega that you see here alongside AEA Small Business Fund, it's a midlife, lower mid-market investment. It's a company that we believe we entered at a reasonable price that benefits from the add-on acquisition that they were raising capital to do. And it has the usual benefits to us of the midlife transactions that we've told you over the years, which is a somewhat shorter expected time to exit, the ability to review an investment that's already been under private equity ownership. We believe this is a differentiated type of investment that we focus on relative to most of our peers. So again, very much down the middle of the fairway of the type of investment opportunities we look for, and an investment that we're very excited about. On the income side, we made two investments so far this year, both alongside very good sponsors in KKR and Vista. They're both in the technology sector, although they do different things. And again, technology is an area we like because it does tend to have, and these are more software focused, and software tends to have high level of recurring revenue, strong customer retention. Quite often there's high switching costs involved, which means that revenue should be somewhat more predictable. So Optiv is a reseller of IT security software, essentially a one-stop shop for cybersecurity for corporate customers. It's a market leader, and it's in an area that we think will grow significantly over time, given all the headlines and all the problems you see with cybersecurity. It's a very well-placed company, and it's cash generative with the types of revenue pattern that I formerly described. SunGard Public Sector is a software provider for local governments and public safety agencies. It produces finance, HR, workforce management software. Again, it has all of those, the things we look for in terms of recurring revenue, customer retention, high switching costs, has a very large customer base. So again, it's exactly the type of investment we look for on the income side of the portfolio. So far, three investments, which, as I say, I think very much fit with all of the things we've told you over the year that we look for on our platform. We believe they are three interesting investments to begin the year. On the realization side in 2017, page 9 highlights the three realizations we've had so far. They've been particularly strong on average, with a 5x multiple across those three on average. All three, as you'll see, are 2012 vintage investments. So you'll have seen on the pie chart that looks at vintage year that 2012 did go down quite a bit in terms of exposure, and this is the explanation. There are other exits, and one in particular that I'll cover on the next page, also in process. So we're pleased so far with the liquidity we've seen in 2017, which really is a continuation of the activity we saw in 2016. The snapshot of the equity portfolio is on page 10. There are now 78 direct equity investments alongside almost 50 different private equity sponsors. You'll see the growth statistics that we produce twice a year are laid out here. They're very similar, actually, to what we laid out in the second quarter report of last year, showing 5% revenue growth, 7% EBITDA growth. So we think very good growth in the portfolio. We also think reasonable valuations and leverage on these companies. You can see on average for those companies that were measured on an EV to EBITDA basis, they were valued at 10.3 times EV to EBITDA with 4.7 times leverage. We think that the portfolio is very well positioned. Just a couple of points looking at the top 10 investments on the right. First of all, there is a high exposure to public companies. That is driven by the two companies at the top of the page, Extraction and Patheon, which were both taken public last year and have performed well since our investment. So those are both investments that over time, probably not in the short term, but over time will be liquidated. We have 16% exposure in our direct equity portfolio to to public companies at this point in time. And there's also one other exit that's been announced on this page, which is Capsigel, which is being acquired by Lonza for $5.5 billion. So between those publics and Capsigel, hopefully in the short to medium term, there's a reasonable amount of liquidity that will continue to come out of this portfolio. Moving on to the income portfolio on page 11, this gives some similar statistics on the portfolio as a whole. We have 33 income investments today, producing a 10% cash yield and 11.3% yield to maturity. Again, we think the leverage level on the portfolio as a whole is at a reasonable level with 5.6 times total leverage. 4.1 of that is senior to us in the capital structure. It's mostly floating rate debt, and the dividend coverage, which we'll talk more about later, is at around 57% from this portfolio. And then there's a number of key statistics that we give to you every time we report on the types of companies we have in the portfolio as a whole, really demonstrating that it continues to be a portfolio in asset-light companies in leading market positions with strong equity cushions and high EBITDA margins. And most importantly, these are all performing credits with no covenant issues. And so with that, I'll turn it over to John Boozer to cover the performance of the portfolio in more detail.
Thanks, Paul. So if you're on page 12 with us now, you'll see the performance broken out for time periods, last 12 months, 3 years, and 5 years, by the different categories of investments that we have, direct equity investments, income investments, and the legacy fund portfolio. So starting with the direct equity investments, the largest portion of the portfolio of $443 million, you'll see the last 12 months, the returns have been 23.3%, and if you look across, consistently high performance out of those equity investments over 3 years and 5 years as well. The income investments, $151 million of the portfolio, you'll see the last 12 months at 14%. So as you will recognize, that's a higher rate of return than the cash yields that Paul just covered on the portfolio. That's largely driven by some opportunistic investing earlier last year when the market had a crack and we were able to buy up a significant number of positions at below par, and then as the market recovered, exit those to help drive the IRR for that portfolio up to 14% last year. And then finally, the legacy fund investment. I believe we've not made a new fund commitment for 6 or 7 years. So that's a tail end portfolio that's winding down, now down to $148.9 million. But again, still performing okay with 10.4% performance in the last 12 months. So as you blend all this together at the portfolio level on a gross basis, the assets produced 18.7% return for the last 12 months. If you look at page 13, this is a chart that we show you each time that just to remind us that in private equity, very often when it comes time to make an exit, the general partners have been a little bit conservative in their valuations of their companies, and there's often an uplift at exit. And so we've continually updated this over the last number of years, and you see the uplift statistics for the three quarters, two quarters, and one quarter prior to the exit. So the general partners, if you go three quarters before the companies have been exited over the last number of years, there's been a 28.8% uplift in the equity value for three quarters, 19% for two, and 15% for one quarter prior. You'll also see the multiples on the left side of this chart for 2015, 16, and 17 year to date of the exits. So right at 2x multiples on each exit in 2015 and 2016. And as Paul mentioned earlier, the first three exits of this year have been very strong with a 5x multiple on those companies. The next page, page 14, is our historic performance. And this shows both how the share price has performed over 1, 3, and 5 years and since inception, as well as the net asset value increases over those periods of time. So looking at the most recent year, the net asset value was up 15.9%. And the share price up 32.5%. You can see the numbers for the 3, 5, and since inception returns as well. But so 2016 was a good year, both for net asset value and for the share price. And then moving on to page 15, this is our dividends and capital position relative to the dividends. So in that bar chart, you'll see on the right that our annualized dividend, as you know, we pay 25 cents twice a year, so the annualized dividend is 50 cents. Of that, currently 29 cents is covered by the yield from the income portfolio. But the $2.06 bar, that represents all the increase in the value of assets, whether it's realized or unrealized, in the portfolio. So our gains on our portfolio of $2.06 covered our dividend last year by four times, or in the last 12 months by four times. So we have a very significant coverage of that dividend out of appreciation in our portfolio. And the balance of the difference between the 206 and 50 just causes the net asset value to grow within the portfolio. You see, again, the capital position on the right, as Paul mentioned, between the cash and available credit facility, we have lots of availability. As Paul also mentioned, we're working on a number of good investment opportunities currently that we hope will come to fruition and use up some of the cash position. Unfunded commitments, very small, 29.4, so there's no risk from overfunding in the way we've run our portfolio with mostly equity or equity and credit direct investments over the last 6 or 7 years. And finally, our commitment coverage is very, very high. If you flip on to page 16, you'll see the share price and the NAV development over the last 12 months. You can see the lowest line, 1289, now up to about 1306, I believe, the share price. And then above that, the NAV per share, 1565. And above that, NAV per share adjusted for dividends that have been paid as well. So the discount has narrowed. As of 12/31, 2016, the discount was 24.3%. We think as of yesterday, the discount was about 16.6%. So a nice narrowing of the discount, which we hope will continue. So I'll turn it back to Peter to go a little bit over what we announced yesterday.
Great, thanks, John. So as a fund listed in the UK, but with a US-based manager and US assets, we've always had a challenge of balancing our desire to have an appropriate and shareholder-friendly corporate governance structure with the need to comply with US securities regulations. So when we created MBPE 10 years ago, we put in place a governance structure that at the time was viewed as cutting edge and best in class from a shareholder perspective. But times change. And as we announced earlier this week, we have, or as we announced last year, actually, we've been spending considerable effort to try to find the best way to fully enfranchise our Class A shares while at the same time complying with U.S. securities regulations. But importantly, doing so in a form that we believe would have the greatest positive net impact on demand for our shares. So we understand that for UK shareholders, voting rights are viewed as a positive, and they should be. The difficulty we've always had, though, with the methods that other companies have used to address the U.S. securities law issues, such as forced sales provisions, is that we believe those would have a material negative impact on demand for our shares, and therefore we didn't think that that was in the best interest of shareholders. We're proud to say, though, that we believe we have come up with an innovative approach that provides real and complete enfranchisement of our Class A shares without the chilling effects that other approaches could have. So as you can see on page 17, under our proposals, Class A shareholders would have the right to vote on all resolutions proposed at the general meetings of the company, including elections of directors. The Class B shares would carry voting rights for the election of directors only if U.S. Resident ownership exceeded 35% and only have the number of votes necessary to address the U.S. securities law concerns. Now, and also very importantly, there would be no forced sales provisions for U.S. shareholders. Now, these voting provisions would allow us to then make changes to our listing arrangements, which we believe would be a very positive thing for the company. We'd move from the specialist fund segment to the premium segment of the London Stock Exchange. The company's market quote on the London Stock Exchange would be redenominated into sterling. Importantly, we will remain a U.S. dollar vehicle, and all the accounts of the company will remain in dollars, but our quote will be in sterling. These actions would then make us eligible for inclusion in the FTSE UK index series, really the all-share index. And the Class A shares would continue to be traded on the Euronext Amsterdam, but would cease to be trading in the specialist funds segment. After we'd been listed on the premium segment of the LSE for a year, we could then consider whether to delist from Euronext. To facilitate the move from the premium segment to the move to the premium segment of the LSE, we'll be making a change to the membership of our board of directors. Under the listing rules, the majority of the directors are required to be independent of the manager. And our director, Chris Sherwell, is not deemed to be independent with respect to the listing rules, as he sits on the board of another Neuberger managed investment company. Now, Chris has been an extremely valuable director of NBPE since the IPO, and we thank him very much for his service to shareholders. We and he understand, however, the importance of the premium listing, and so accordingly, he will be stepping down. Chris would resign as a director prior to our admission, and would be replaced by a new director prior to that admission as well. We're in the final stages of selecting a new director and expect to make an announcement on that topic shortly. So in addition, we're proposing other technical changes in the articles that you can see in more detail in the circular. These include amendments to reflect the proposed alteration in voting rights, everything we've just been talking about. Also, we would look to update the investment policy of the company to put it more in a form more typical of a premium-listed investment vehicle, though the policy would be materially consistent with the investment approach which the company has been undertaking up until now. We're also updating the investment management agreement and partnership agreement. These changes would enhance the board's power to supervise performance of the manager, once again, to make it more typical of a premium-listed investment vehicle. The management and fees and incentive fees paid to the manager would remain materially unchanged, but we would have some clarifying language to clarify some calculation methodologies, particularly in the case of when NBPE invests in NB-managed funds. And lastly, the fund administration and services agreement that's currently between the manager and the administrator would be transferred from the manager to the company, so there would be a direct contractual relationship between NBPE and its administrator, rather than having that be routed through the manager. So we believe these proposed changes will provide a number of benefits to NBPE and its shareholders. We think these changes will place NBPE at the forefront of good corporate governance practices. We believe these changes will remove a barrier of investment that certain investors have had for buying NBPE shares. We think that this approach would treat all shareholders equitably and not rely on forced sales provisions, which could have a chilling effect on the buying of NBPE shares. And we think that these changes would facilitate NBPE's eligibility for inclusion in indices, which could have a positive effect on liquidity of the shares. So we think all of these areas, which making the shares more attractive to a broader range of people, and including the shares potentially in an index, would have a positive effect on liquidity of the shares and therefore be in the interest of all shareholders. So obviously, these are just a summary of the various proposals, and we encourage you all to review the circular and very much encourage all of you to submit your proxies as well. So with that, thank you very much, and we'd be happy to take any questions that you may have.
At this time, I would like to remind everyone, in order to ask a question, press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. And your first question comes from the line of Charles Murphy from Panmure Gordon.
Hi, good morning. I've got a question on the 2016 performance. You sort of reported in the annual report of the unrealized performance at about $80 million. If you strip out the gains on listed securities, what were the value drivers between sort of earnings growth and multiple expansion, things like that? How did that all split out?
Charles, this is Paul Daggett. So your question is just taking out completely any public gains from the portfolio, what was the underlying driver and performance?
Yeah. Was it multiple expansion with earnings growth? Just on the private equity element, the direct equity bit.
Yeah, in our report, we don't, which obviously drives your question, we don't break it out that way. We really, we look at realized versus unrealized, and the split for that is broken out. I don't have the answer.
Happy for you to come back.
Yeah. And just
to mention though is if you look, we're carrying the portfolio on average at 10.3 times. And that's about where it was last year at this time, right? So yeah. We have not on average had had the multiple that we're carrying the portfolio at increase materially in the last 12 months, right?
Yeah.
So obviously you have lots of different factors and lots of different things going up and down in individual companies, but on a portfolio-wide basis, it would be predominantly driven by the growth and earnings of the companies because we're carrying the portfolio at roughly the same average valuation level.
If I could just add to that, Peter, as we go through the valuation process of the unrealized companies in the portfolio, what you see is that the managers, as Peter just pointed out, tend to maintain multiples that are fairly consistent and similar to where they purchased the companies. And the driver at the end of the uplift on exit that we talked about earlier, that is what it's at that exit where the multiple expansion kicks in and drives value. So the last bit of uplift tends to be multiple expansion because they've carried it at a multiple less than they exit at, and the gradual increases over time during the holding period tend to be EBITDA expansions.
Okay. That makes good sense. Have you got any sense of how much the actual listed equity gain was? Because you've almost answered my whole question if you...
part of it comes down to how you measure it, right? Because we actually had some very good IPOs last year, right? So you had both the Extraction, for example, which was a material uplift at the time it IPO'd, right? So it wasn't a full year because it IPO'd during the year, right? So
I would give you the return to the IPO on the basis that the return after the IPO is in the lap of the market.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I've got can I ask you another question, and I'll stop being awkward. How fast you said you were very comfortable about your ability to get reinvested. Do you see yourself leveraging yourself much past the ZDP debt that you've got as a sort of matter of strategy, or as opposed to just opportunistically, like you were earlier in the year, there was some great value in fixed income, so you had a chunk.
Yeah, I think what we've talked about historically is being somewhere between 110, 120, 125% invested in that range, and mm-hmm. obviously flexibility higher or lower based upon our expectations in terms of shorter term events that we expect to be happening. So that's sort of the range we would expect to be, baseline, with some variability around that. The exact time, we are never going to feel forced to put money to work to say that we have a certain investment level, right? We do private investing, not public investing. And so if that happens very quickly, that's great. If that takes a longer period of time, that's fine too. We're not ever going to feel forced to make an investment that we don't have high confidence in. So, that having been said, as you can see, just from our pace, more recently we've seen more interesting equity investments than we have debt investments, right? So that's why we've done more equity investments recently than debt investments. And so, it's easier to find good equity investments than it is good debt investments right now in the marketplace.
Right.
So we're working on lots of things, as John said, but we'll see which ones actually end up materializing. But we're working very actively on a number of different opportunities.
Yeah, and just finally on the legacy portfolio, do you see that just running off, or could you imagine envisage yourself doing a portfolio trade?
We opportunist over the time. NBPE has done, used both approaches historically, and we regularly review what prices we can get for assets. So when people ask us which of our assets are for sale, our answer is all of them. It's just a question of price, right? So for us, it's really just a question of do we think that the NBP shareholders will make more money from us holding and just having the normal realization pace, or will we make more money by selling in the secondary market today and reinvesting? So we actively review that, and from time to time we make sales.
Okay. Well, gentlemen, thank you very much.
And again, to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. That's star 1. And there are no further questions at this time.
Great. Well, then, thank you very much, everyone. And once again, we encourage all of you to submit your proxies. And if you have any further questions, please feel free to call Paul, John, or me, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you very much.
And this concludes today's conference call. You may now disconnect.